Mini episode 1952 of the FDH Lounge is brought to you by Sportsology, delivering unconventional columns and webcasts about sports, TV, music, movies, and more. Follow them on the web at sportsology.com.
The FDH Lounge. You want to schedule your life around it.
A long time ago, on a gloomy, wet Cleveland spring night, two men stand alone amidst the late night drizzle. Their voices echo across the vacant station parking lot as they debate the merits of the great American radio show that have been missing for far too long. On that night, an idea was born. That idea became the FDH Lounge. Welcome to the FDH Lounge.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the FDH Lounge. Rick Morris and Chris Galloway, your FDH Lounge original dignitaries, here today to break down all of the exquisite profile aspects of the 2026 NFC West, arguably football's best division. We've maybe seen a few cracks in the form of at least one of the teams in the last several months here, but certainly the two best teams in football a year ago. They played the real Super Bowl, essentially, in the NFC Championship game, Seattle and the LA Rams. This is a division that was well worth waiting for. It's the last of the eight divisions that we are breaking down. The one segment that we still have as part of this series subsequently is our 2026-2027 somewhat early NFL playoff preview. And if you want to hear any of our big picture thoughts for the season, if you want to hear anything where we're talking about the off season and everything like that, go back to the first part of our series, the AFC East, where we put everything in there as we traditionally do. And the tradition the last couple of years also on the show here has been the format for this segment, the way we get started anyways, is it comes from Fantasy Football Draftology 2026, available on the main page at fantasydrafthelp.com. And at the back of the guide, it is one run-on sentence for each team in the NFL. And so for the NFC West, these are the teams in the order predicted by FDH for the season. The LA Rams. Los Angeles learned in 2025 that the deck is really stacked against you if you can't win what is arguably the league's toughest division. And with the Seahawks not going anywhere, the Rams had an appropriately aggressive offseason, decisively upgrading at both cornerback spots and importing Myles Garrett, likely edging ahead of the defending champs by millimeters. Seattle. The Hawks could be a shade weaker in the trenches than they were in their championship run, but they covered for the loss of Kenneth Walker III, locked down JSN, and generally maintained momentum, albeit they are now pairing Sam Darnold with a first-time offensive coordinator in the wake of Clint Kubiak's inevitable departure. San Francisco. Post-draft social media coverage highlighted just how much the Niners have gone against the grain in recent years when it comes to value in the annual college selection process, so you have to put that qualifier on it when you say that San Fran has few roster holes. But the ones that they do have are on the interior of the offensive line, which could present problems, and the offense, although skilled, is built exclusively for today as Mike Evans joins CMC and George Kittle. Also, by the way, a number of things happened with San Francisco after I wrote all of that. So, side note there. Arizona. Poor Mike LaFleur is the fourth coach in a division where they'll be doing documentaries on the other three coaches in the division for decades to come. But the good news for him, if any, is that he's being given a long leash in the rebuild as the franchise is clearly tanking for Arch Manning in 2027. And as regards San Francisco, who I don't have making the playoffs, I have it being the Rams and the Seahawks, as I'm guessing 99% of the world does this year. I have them making the playoffs, but San Fran. Of course, the things that had happened since I put that in there in Fantasy Football Draftology 2026. Of course, the Dewey that ended up getting picked up by Kyle Shanahan, and just the bad crash and just everything that ended up being the case there that was unreported. So a real kind of shifty set of scenarios there.
Do we know it was a DUI, or do we just suspect that because there was enough cover up?
I'm glad you called me on that. It may not have been a Dewey. I should retract that.
We don't know. We don't know that. Okay. I mean, it certainly lends itself.
Retraction. Don't sue me, Kyle.
Well, I will say this. It lends itself to speculation just because of the lack of information for weeks in the cover-up.
The cover up is shady. I won't. You know,
a normal bad car accident with nothing else as a factor. You would expect the press would have been all over it and reporting it, and you know, get well cards while he's in the hospital, etc. So, I don't know what happened. We won't speculate, but there's something off there.
I mean, the funny thing is that, like, I don't know that anybody in their right mind would have thought coming into the off season that San Francisco would have multiple threads reminiscent of the great show Trailer Park Boys. But at that time of the Kyle Shanahan thing, when that happened, people I saw online, people were flashing back to season 7 of there, and the storyline with Ray the truck driver, friends of the road, Bubbles, friends of the road. So did Kyle Shanahan perhaps have one of the friends of the road who was in the front seat with him, maybe doing some stuff that might have distracted him? There's been speculation on that, on whether or not he might have been doing that. But then flash forward, I mean, how on the nose is it for Trailer Park Boys? You got Jed York, which, by the way, he ended up giving me one of my fantasy football team names for this year, which is Jed York's Fantasy Park, or I'm sorry, I'm fumbling the name, Jed York's Trailer Park Pimps. That's going to be one of my two teams, and the other one is going to be the Hormuz Cruise. So just all the things happening with San Francisco, the whole thing with, again, as you mentioned in a previous station, the substation claiming a lot more victims here as far as the injuries that have been happening in the preseason. And it's just like, there's like way too much going on with this team for us to put any faith in them whatsoever. That in my estimation.
Yeah, I have never seen, I don't know if you saw today, that Jed York was arrested pulling into the trailer park. The owner of the trailer park wanted to make clear that there was no prostitution going on there. That's okay. Just where they pulled them over and arrested him. So he was not actually in a trailer.
Still keeping my fantasy name though.
I've never seen a trailer park try to distance itself from a billionaire before.
They're trying to preserve their good name and not be sullied by Jed York.
I mean, they literally are. They're literally like, yeah, no, we got nothing to do with this guy. Stop dragging our name through the mud. And as it turns out, it was actually just it was a sting operation.
Yeah.
It was a prostitution sting, human trafficking sting, you know, trying to reel in these dopes that respond to these ads in a paper.
Yeah.
That's literally what he did. And now we learn that he had filed for divorce from his wife back in May and had actually moved back to Youngstown and moved into his parents' house.
Okay.
I think is just, I get it. You know, you're getting divorced. You know, I got divorced in my early 30s. I'm sorry. I guess it was late 30s at that point. You know, I'm imagining, you know, the what has to be going on in your life that you're like, I'm a billionaire owner of a NFL team. I'm leaving San Francisco because I'm filing for divorce, and I'm moving in back with mom and dad in my childhood home in Youngstown. You're a billionaire. Yeah. Like, couldn't you just, I don't know, get a new pad? Like, I don't, you know, except you decide you got to move back into your old room. Like, I don't know what was going on there.
Jed York, just imagining him, Mom, where's the meatloaf?
Right. I mean, I guess it is, not to crack wise, but it's a reminder in my mind to everybody that it doesn't matter how much money you have or how much fame or whatnot. Everybody is just basic people. We're all the same, right?
Sure.
And his life was a mess on some level. For whatever reason, we don't know what was going on there, but he's getting divorced. And so he moved home to mom and dad's house in Youngstown, right? And he's a grown man, right? I mean, it just goes to show you that, you know, everybody puts the pants on one at a time. Everybody makes mistakes, you know.
Well, that being said, I mean, give yourself some credit here, because even in your time of difficult adjustment, to my knowledge, you weren't making roadies down to Mahoning County to hit some of the hot spots down there, buddy. So not everybody does this kind of stuff.
I was not. There were no trailer parks in my divorce proceeding life.
I will say this. This is what I flashed back to, is that, like, and this is, I think they were shutting these down on the front end of how long you've lived in Northeast Ohio. But, like, I remember it used to be in the Plain Dealer. They'd be running ads in the sports section primarily there for these places, that the Asian massage places down in the valley that absolutely, yes, turned out 100% to be rub and tugs. Because when I was
working, knows the old Plain Dealer ads for Tokyo Spa and Warren.
Everybody saw those. Well, like,
they were endless.
We saw that, and we all thought we knew what it was, and then I found out exactly what it was. I won't drop the guy's name, but when I was working at the Cleveland Athletic Club, I got to know a guy and be friends with him. Like, he was a regular at one of them spots. So it's like, yeah, those things were exactly what we all thought they were. So this wasn't that. That area is infamous for that particular vice trade. And so, yeah, it was a real thing of familiarity for anybody that's grown up in Northeast Ohio hearing somebody get busted for something illicit in the Mahoning Valley. It's one of the things it's known for the most, quite frankly. So it just is, but it's indicative of an off season that they've had where, like, I don't think any team has ever gone on to great success in a season having overcome all of the self-inflicted wounds that they've had. And even going back to, again, yet another draft that, again, it was funny, we talked about it in the post-draft thing, that it basically took like a couple of folks on Twitter kind of pointing this out, but the number of years that they had deviated from what was essentially the conventional wisdom in the draft, more than most teams, and John Lynch just coming right out and saying, like, we take who we want to take, and it's just like, that's a very fraught approach, because it's one of these things where it's like, I always say in any situation like that, then you better be right. But you look at all the guys that they've passed on over the years. You look at the ongoing situations that they've had with guys like Brandon Ayuk and the whole messy situation there. So, I mean, the 49ers to me are a mess. They're talented.
The pushback I'm going to give you, Rick, is that I think compared to the rest of the league, despite that, they have actually drafted and developed very well. Better than most teams. Yeah. And so I'm not prepared to just throw them under the bus. It's hard for me to do when they have two of our Ohio Bobcats on that roster, which shows that they do have a solid football mind.
They did well there.
And I have the stadium in the background, the former playground of one Austin Pleasance and Curtis Rourke.
That's right.
I can get what you're saying, but they have plucked some players that others haven't, and they've developed some guys that others haven't, and they've seen talent where maybe others haven't. I mean, Brock Purdy, 7th-round draft pick. Brandon Ayuk was not a heavily, you know, guy, you know, but he was productive.
Right.
Debo Samuel, I mean, he had some juice, but, you know. I would say that by and large, and some of the guys on defense, they've done a very good job, better than most teams, in drafting and developing. I'm not throwing them under the bus on that at all.
Yeah.
It may be a little non-traditional at times, but they've made it work. Now, that all being said, that roster has gotten very old very fast, and they are breaking down. And to your point, some of their young talent, through injury or insanity, is leaving them sort of in the lurch as it relates to their roster. You know, I loved the Pearsall pick. I was big on him. Really liked him coming out of Florida. You know, and before his rookie season, he gets shot in the street. He wasn't doing anything wrong. Guy tried to rob him and shot him. I mean, this time now he gets hurt. I mean, he's had a terribly unfortunate start to his, in terms of medical, to his career. He was a guy I really liked. I thought he was underrated. And, you know, from your standpoint, they may have overdrafted him, you know, versus maybe a round
Sure.
early, but I still liked the kid. You know, they've been good at acquiring talent. And so even in free agency, they have found some guys and through trade. So I'm not going to knock them there in that regard. They've been above average, but they've gotten old. They're fragile. They're, you know, whether it's the substation with his voodoo, you know, and I, of course, I just turned the substation into a person, right, with his voodoo, like it's it's sentient being. But at this point, it might be. I don't know. You know, they've got some problems, right? In terms of that roster, and so, you know, this year's going to be a challenge. I'm not counting them out in terms of the playoffs and sneaking into that last playoff wild card, because somehow this coaching staff and Shanahan find a way to coach through these challenges every year. And, you know, they're a team that nobody wants to face week to week. They're tough mentally. They're well coached. And I think we should expect that again. I've got them third in the division. Don't get me wrong. But I don't think the wheels completely fall off this year, although I think they're wobbly and they're going to have to do a lot of retooling for 2027. The way I see the division, I've got the Rams in first place. And again, I'm going to say it just like I said last year, the Rams will only go as far as Matthew Stafford's achy old man back. And I got an old man back riddled with arthritis and other things. And so I know how hard it can be when I get up in the morning at times.
Sure.
And I don't have 300-pound linemen crushing me. So I think the Rams could be as good as they were last year, maybe even better with some of the new talent acquisitions. Okay. You know, they're really pushing all the chips into the middle of the table. They realize, and I'll give them credit, they realize that this is it for Matthew Stafford. They know it, which is why they drafted Ty Simpson. They went and said, we'll never, ever get a quarterback sitting there at third. We want to be the Super Bowl champs, hoisting the trophy, and we know we're not getting a quarterback, so we're going to take this kid now and work to develop him. Depth on the roster be damned. They know they went and traded for Myles Garrett and gave up on a young, dynamic Jared Verse. They gave up 3 draft picks. Again, F them picks.
Yeah.
They have pushed all the chips to the middle. All of them. The McDuffie trade with Kansas City. They are all in. All in. And, you know, I respect it, right? There's no hedging. I mean, the Rams are saying it's Super Bowl championship or bust.
And Aaron
because
Donald
they know next year Stafford's going to be older, more broken down. Some of these guys are not going to be able to pay, and it's going to be time to pay the piper, but they want to try to get that trophy one more time. So I give them the credit. Let's assume everybody stays healthy. I'll go 13-4. They win the division. I think the Seahawks take a little step back with a new OC, some depth issues. They've actually, I will say this, for a Super Bowl champion, they lost, what, 2 guys? 2 starters? That's actually kind of unheard of.
And immediately replaced one of them. I know you didn't love the Jadarian Price pick in the draft. I did, because when you're getting the guy who's probably the consensus number 2 running back in the draft and doesn't even have many city miles on him because he was playing behind the consensus number 1 running back in the draft, this is the opposite of drafting an Alabama running back. You're getting a low-mileage guy to come in. Now, granted, none of the backs have really been that, you know, injury-free here in the preseason, so it may take a while to get a little bit of a rhythm there. By the way, the Rams also bringing back the best defensive player of the 21st century, Aaron Donald, potentially. But my guess is that it will happen, and he'll be there in at least situational.
My guess is Aaron Donald doesn't see the field until like week 6 or 7.
And that would be smart.
Well, I think it would be. I don't think they need him right now. I think they want to bring him later. And they don't want to – he's not going to be in a position to dominate day 1.
Yeah.
He's a Hall of Famer. He's a Golden Jacket guy. He's in great shape. He's dominant, but you're going to have to ease him in.
He's been out for 3 years.
He's a second half of the season guy.
Absolutely.
Which is going to work out well for them, I think. And you're going to ask him to play two downs.
Right.
You're not going to ask him to play, you know. So they're not going to put a huge burden on him, but he's going to be that gravy on top, to your point.
Yeah.
So I think the Seahawks take a slight step backwards with 11 wins, second in the division. Dangerous team. They're in the playoffs. Anything can happen. But again, as we've discussed, new offensive coordinator, God, I loved the Gray Zibel draft pick. I mean, you know how high I was on him.
Right.
I've actually come to figure out, Rick, and I don't know, is it because I played offensive line in high school? And this is not that's not some sort of weird humble brag. I wasn't any good. I think overall, when it comes to talent evaluation, when we go through the drafts and all this other stuff, I think over the years I've been way better at assessing offensive linemen than any other position. I confidently sort of make that self announcement that I think I've gotten the offensive line analysis pretty. I've been a lot better at it than any other position. Love that pick. So I like the Seahawks. They're going to have a good season. They're going to the playoffs. I don't have them going to the Super Bowl. I'll stick with the Rams just because they went all in. And if everybody stays healthy, I think they get there.
All right. Again,
if Matt Stafford's back snaps in week six and that's the end of that, and the Browns get the 16th pick out of that.
Yeah, although that would be like the first time in the history of ever for the Browns were that to be the case. But I think I initially had the Seahawks right after the draft. I still had them as the team to beat. I flip-flopped to the Rams when they made the Myles Garrett trade. And when the Myles Garrett trade appeared to augur the addition yet again of Aaron Donald, which again, fraught with difficulty, 3 years out, whatever. But again, I'll say it again, the best defensive player of the 21st century. And a tiny handful of the best defensive players of all time. So that's going to help right there. And again, just everything that the Rams are going to be able to bring to bear. Again, obviously the health of Stafford is an equalizer. The Seahawks are set up again very well, as much as they can be. The inevitable transition at OC, because you weren't going to hang on to Kubiak forever as your OC. So a first-time play caller in there. Could be some bumps in the road. I don't know that will necessarily be the case. Change in ownership, but I don't think that's going to matter at all. I don't think that's going to have any bearing on anything. And by the way, quick cul-de-sac back to San Francisco. It is never a good sign for a team whenever something brings up in your head two different Will Ferrell references. I already made the meatloaf reference before, but then when you were talking about Ricky Pearsall, it came into my head from Austin Powers. I was hearing the Mustafa voice. You shot me! It's never a good sign when multiple Will Ferrell characters are coming to mind for your team. That's not an actor you want associated with your thing. Not a guy that's a comedic actor. You know, you want it to be Jason Statham or somebody else like that that makes you think of your team for the season. But
it might be a funny season for the 49ers. But you know, the one team that we haven't discussed at all, there is irrelevant. A fourth team in this division.
They are the fourth team, yes, irrelevant. They're the number two, though, I mean, in the doo-doo sense of whatever. Like, look, they're not going anywhere this year. Their quarter
three wins. They get 3 wins.
Yeah, and like, is their quarterback room as full of tumbleweeds as the Browns? Well, no, nobody's is. But I mean, they're one of the next teams in line, essentially, when it comes to that.
Have Jacoby Brissett all damn day long in Cleveland. Can we trade for him back? I was saying that when he couldn't get a contract.
Yeah,
I was like, dump this entire room and go get me Jacoby Brissett. Bring him back.
Absolutely. Jacoby Brissett is better than anybody that's here. I arguably even today's version of Jameis Winston would be better. So that's a thing where, again,
dude, they might take Carson Beck over anybody the Browns have. Actually, I would.
I don't know about that because apparently you and I differ.
I know
on this,
your niece is hating, but I
agree. I agree. I think it's a sign of how smart they are that they think he's a fraud. I agree with my nieces. We apparently don't agree with you. The Morris family is not in alignment with you on Carson Beck. Perhaps we will be at some point this season when he inevitably really shits the bed and has like six interceptions in a game or something. Maybe you'll come around.
Maybe he does. But when I look at the Browns quarterback room, I would still rather have
because it's the worst quarterback room in the history of the league. Yeah, I'd take him over what's there.
Not the history of the league, but it's...
He's a garden variety fraud. This is like the worst ever. I'd take a garden variety fraud over what the Browns have. Yes, yes, that's... I don't know if my nieces would. I think they would. I think they're pragmatic enough that they would.
Todd Monken wins six or seven games this year. They should give him a lifetime contract.
I don't see that happening, but... That's a thing where, and I'm going to set this up for our wrap-up segment here, which is, of course, previewing the NFL playoffs for this year. It's incredibly high stakes, I think, in this division. Because I think I was saying this even coming down the stretch last year between the Rams and the Seahawks, that the way that it goes, and there's been some folks in the league advocating for, and I think folks in the NFC North, I think, weren't the Lions one of the teams that was pushing that, like, they should reseed for the playoffs? It's like, it's not really fair that you could be the second best team in football and still be the number five seed in your own conference. But
that's nonsense. That they've got to fix that.
Yeah, but I mean, until they do, it's a thing where, again, now, did the Rams make it easier on themselves going and playing down to the level of the Panthers in the first round? No, they did not. And then that game against the Bears, that famous Sunday night game that will be a long remember for heartbreak in Chicago. That one there, that was a very, very tough game, as we knew that it would be. So they had to go through that versus Seattle blew through San Francisco relatively easily in that game. And so they were set up very well. So it went far beyond home field advantage. So it's like between Seattle and the Rams, I think most of the prognosticators in football, me included, probably you included, would say one of them's the one seed, one of them's the five seed. And like a year ago, not going to say that you can't get it done as the five seed, but like last year, we saw how much the deck can be stacked against you. I think it'll be whoever wins the division that's going to have the decisive edge on the other team this year, even if that is not a deserved kind of a thing in terms of the league having a stupid seeding system.
It's a stupid seeding system, but I agree with you. It'll work against Seattle this year. That's why I don't have them go repeating.
Okay.
You know, again, a team that's returning all but two starters from a Super Bowl champion, we should be talking a lot about repeat, and nobody is. And I think part of the reason is, and I don't, maybe not anyone's analyzed it the way you have, but one is they knew last year that the Seattle Rams, you know, there was no daylight in those teams.
Right.
And you saw it with the record and the points. Didn't they, the three games, they basically ended up basically tied in points? And
I think so,
like,
yeah.
They were as evenly matched as you possibly can be.
Yes.
Right? I think people are looking at it like, yeah, Seattle brought all these people back, but they didn't really upgrade. L.A. has really thrown in, and they're upgrading all over the place. So we're going to guess that the Rams are the number one seed. Like you've outlined, Seattle falls to five. They pulled the shorter straw to make it there and advantage LA this year.
Yeah, and look, what that means is they're going to get a bye in the first round anyways because they'll be playing the NFC South team, but God forbid they play down to the level of that team like the Rams did a year ago, and you just make it harder to come out and win the next week, the more energy you have to expend. The Rams had to expend a lot of energy just to make it to Seattle. Now, Seattle may do a better job of taking care of business. They are the defending champions, so they may not have
I think it's going to be hard for Seattle to go on the road if they had to go on the road in the first go-round to play the Texans in Houston against, you know, arguably the number one defense. That's not going to be easy, to your point.
Yeah.
They may not come out of that.
Yeah. Well, and that's the thing. Yeah, it could be a tough draw. situationally in some aspects of the game. So that's entirely possible. But it's a thing where, yeah, when you look at it, again, Seattle is very well poised to come back and to make a very, very strong run. I think it's going to come down to the end. Something I want to mention with the NFC West, even though this is not an on-field thing, this is more a business thing, but it's something that really kind of made me scratch my head. So with the NFC West, you see this year, it'll be the first ever Wednesday night opener. It's the Super Bowl rematch with Seattle and New England because they had to make room the next night for the game down under, down in Melbourne. It's going to be the Rams and the 49ers. Now, and that game, I think, going to Netflix or whatever, part of their goofy, streaming ass stuff. But, typically, Chris, you never get, although I guess I'm undermining this when I say it was Chargers, Chiefs, and Brazil, but typically you don't get divisional games there. I think it's the Rams giving up their home gate against San Francisco. Chargers Chiefs was in Brazil. And so that it's happened before.
I thought that was Packers Chiefs in Brazil.
Packers Eagles was, I think, the first year in Brazil. And then I think it was Chargers.
Oh, okay. That was here. We've done it twice. All right. I lost track.
And then this is this whole goofiness of Friday night is too late in the schedule this year. Whatever that congressional law is that's supposed to protect high school football, you can't play it because it's like the fact that it's like September 11th or 10th or whenever the hell it is, it's too late on the calendar to play the game, on a Friday night. So it had to be on a Thursday night. So that's where they're playing it. Although it will be Friday in Australia, albeit Friday morning or whatever. But anyways, It's weird to me that there's a big divisional game that's being given up for these purposes. Typically, the owners don't go for anything like that. So I wonder what kind of arm twisting happened from Goodell to end up making that happen.
I think it's arm twisting. I think it's dollar signs, man.
Are you making more money to play down under than you would be for a big home gate against one of your big rivals? I don't know.
Probably get a pot sweetener on the TV. They probably get a big gate. For all you know, in order to play these games in these foreign countries, we don't know if those governments give them additional money, tax breaks.
Okay.
We don't know. And the other thing is the NFL is obsessed with growing the game globally.
Yeah.
And they know that even if there's not an immediate return, they have to keep doing these things to grow the game globally.
Okay.
And so that's what that's about. That's a long-term thing. But we don't know whether they get subsidized. I mean, I don't know.
Okay.
Well, for all we know, the Australian government picks up the tab on all the hotel and all the other expenses involved with it to make it happen. So now it's, there's no expense on the travel. And who knows what kind of pot. I mean, first of all, the NFL is not going to a foreign country and just playing a game to play a game.
True.
They will go to that country and ask for money and subsidies and kickbacks and you name it. They're not just playing it.
Oh, that's definitely true. I would agree with that. And it is one of these situations where I would posit that by the standards of what you're talking about, I'd say the over-under is 20-30 before Goodell has negotiated for some of that sweet, sweet Saudi bonesaw money. 20-30 in Saudi, I'm calling it, Chris.
Yeah. I'm surprised the Saudis haven't reached out, and they probably have.
Yeah.
Try to get a game there and paid them a lot of money to do it. My guess is, to your point, they've probably said no to this point. One, because it's not a market they're trying to get into.
Yeah.
There's no market for American football in those, unlike in Europe and parts of Asia, Australia, there's a market for it.
Mm-hmm.
They're not getting kids to play the game. They're not, what are you gonna have? Burka wearing cheerleaders? So I think from that standpoint, they've probably been offered that live money, like the golf tour, but they've probably said no because there's no long-term benefit is my guess. and then the short-term political, you know, things that they'd have to answer to, as it relates to it, to getting into bed with those folks. So my guess is, to this point, you're probably right. The offer's probably already come. And to this point, they don't feel it's in their interests.
There's all kinds of unique aspects that would come from having a game there. Like you said about the cheerleaders. I mean, it would be the only time that we've ever heard, hey, look at the sexy eye holes on that cheerleader, you know?
And American football is all about selling light beer, and those are things that aren't going to fly. I don't know, admittedly, Dubai or Saudi Arabia or any of their, from a cultural standpoint, they're big into soccer, right? I don't know if that population even really even acknowledges NFL football.
Yeah, who knows?
And so it just may not be a thing. You know, you had NFL Europe. You've had a huge American influence on Europe post-World War II. So American football is not foreign to those people.
That is true. And my prediction also is, if you're giving a game to MBS and the Bonesaw Boys, it will be sponsored by True Value. I think there's your sponsorship for the game if it ends up going there. So too soon? So, but anyways, well, on that gruesome note, we will prepare next to make our early playoff previews for the 2026-2027 NFL season. Thus marks the culmination of our divisional previews for the season. So thank you so much for this one and all the others, Chris. And we'll talk playoffs here on the other side. And thank you, everybody, for checking out this and our other divisional preview segments for 2026 on the FDH Lounge.